Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Hello and welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 212. I'm Thomas. That's Jamie. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm okay, Thomas. How are you?
Oh, wow. I'm excited for this episode, but I don't know what to think because I don't know. I had seen the, you know, some of the controversy around Joker and the fact that it seemed from what I was seeing to be the kind of thing that, you know, is maybe going to be the tale of the loner white guy who exacts revenge on society and that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, this is going to be a kind of change of pace for this show. We can watch this movie and do some analysis on it, do some, you know, give some opinions. And you were down, and I'm so glad you were game to do it, except that meant I had to follow through and actually watch it as well. But then I watched it, and now I don't know what to think. And we were starting to talk about it, you and I, before recording, and we were thinking, let's just talk. We don't really know what each other is going to think on this. Let's just talk it out, see where it goes. So we watched Joker. so that you don't have to unless you still want to. That's fine. But I do think that we'll have to, you know, I certainly respect the sanctity of spoilers. And I don't want to, I'm not going to launch into anything without first giving warning that I do believe we will have to spoil the movie in order to talk about it in any meaningful way. So if that's something that, you know, is going to break your heart, feel free to pause, come back to this later after you've seen it. But I will also say, if you're on the fence about it, that it's not, you know, it's not, the spoilers don't really matter. Like, it's not, this is not The Sixth Sense or anything. Like, it's not, you know, I personally, on the scale of things where it's like, oh, you don't want to get this spoiled for you, this is like a zero for me. There's nothing to spoil. But that's my opinion. Feel free to either check out and, like I said, pause and come back or whatever you want to do. All right. Spoiler warning issued. Consider it issued, official, and we will henceforth not care about spoiling stuff. So how should we start this?
So I have so many different thoughts about this. Probably worth stating right at the beginning before we get into discovering what we both thought about it. That I actually tend to enjoy comic book movies. And so, you know, for most of them, I'm often at the first showing that's there. Not generally DC movies, because those have been largely disappointing. But I, unlike Thomas, I tend to like the comic book movies as a form of escapism and just good old indulgent fun. This one left me conflicted. I'm glad that I saw it, though. This was the best DC movie, I think, that they've done recent years.
So wait, the Christian Bale Batmans are in that list?
Yeah, no, those are very good. And I sort of put them in their own class.
Sure.
As opposed to the more recent varieties of DC movies that we've been subjected to.
I think we should start off by saying we both firmly agree with Stefan Molyneux. No, I'm just kidding.
No, we don't.
Sorry, no, nobody pull that audio. It's funny. You said you saw a tweet from him and you were going to send it. I was like, oh, great. What fresh nonsense will this be? But it was just him saying he hated the movie. And I was like, oh, maybe this is the most I've ever agreed with Stefan Molyneux, I think, ever.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't hate it, and I think his criticisms, the reason that he doesn't like it is probably some of the reasons that I think it's interesting. Although I'm not sure that, given especially some of the things that the director has said, that it was intended to have the sort of incisive social commentary that it seemed to have at times. But I don't know, maybe we should give like the setup of the movie to kind of give a more full picture before talking about it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sure. Feel free. Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is an origin story for the Joker, and it's an
Or is it? Sorry, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later.
This is an attempt to explain how, you know, a seemingly regular person goes on to become an iconic villain. And this is actually one of my biggest objections to the movie. Obviously, the Joker being criminally insane is sort of standard fare for the Batman series. But I felt like this movie got there in a way that was very cheap and kind of lazy and borderline irresponsible. So just to reiterate, spoiler warning, Joker has lived most of his life not being violent. We come to find out that he was abused as a child. But our first meeting with him, he's just this sort of, you know, mentally ill, physically disabled person navigating the lower rungs of society as well as he can. And then what happens is there are budget cuts and he loses his access to healthcare and the medication that he needs to treat his various mental health illnesses. And he goes from lowly sort of sad character too violent as soon as he goes off his meds. And I just found this not good.
Yeah, well, and you can combine it with he gets free and easy access to a gun as well. That's kind of a major part of it, which, I mean, I guess that critique of society maybe is good. The fact that, like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be able to get a gun so easily, or anybody shouldn't be able to get a gun so easily.
Right. That's an excellent point. So and the reason that he's given a gun, which is worth pointing out, that it turns out people with mental illness are disproportionately more likely to be the victims of violence than they are to be the perpetrators of it. And consistent with that empirical reality, you know, one of the opening scenes of the movie is him being beaten up. He's literally, you know, kicked in the ribs and abused behind a dumpster. And the reason he's given this gun is, you know, in the interest of self-defense, or so it seems. And he begins to carry this gun around with him everywhere after this more recent trauma occurs to him.
Like you were saying earlier, I can't decide where to even start because I have so many kind of different thoughts about this, and I'm sure you do as well, and who knows how they'll interact. But maybe we should just take a second to mention, like, the potential controversy. People... Look, I think I would have gone into this movie a lot different had the director not said the really stupid thing that we actually talked about in the other episode about, like, comedies can't do it nowadays because the left, and had I not already been, like, you know, a little annoyed with that, I might have gone into it differently and I might have come out of it differently. But I actually have to say that, like, there was a bit of a, I don't know, there was a bit of a stir about this thing, and like, oh, is this going to be the typical, like, white male character that people are, that I don't know, the kinds of people who have committed mass shootings, aka, you know, white men, basically young white men, are they going to, like, identify with this guy and be inspired by it in some way? And, like, I don't, of all the problems with it, I'm not really sure about that. Like, maybe. But I also don't know that it's any more problematic than a lot of stuff that's still popular. Like, most things are just violent, you know, like, senseless violence.
So Michael Moore definitely tries to make that connection in the review that he posted to his, you know, personal Facebook account. And, you know, I found his assessment of the movie to not really be consistent with its own internal logic. You know, he's simultaneously comparing the Joker to Trump, to the protesters, and he even invokes the Columbine shooters at one point because he's getting at this sense of, you know, aggrievement that people feel, what it's like to exist on the margins of society. One of the things that really stood out to me while watching this movie is that, you know, Arthur's character, before he becomes the Joker, he clearly is marginalized. He obviously is existing in a state of, you know, financial destitution. He has, you know, multiple handicaps. And yet, also within the confines of the movie, the only people that he turns to sort of buoy him and lift him up are people of color. And it really sort of struck me the way that this movie sort of centered how it's difficult for white men. And so I do think there is that element where it's always how the world is difficult for white men that tends to get centered. Because ultimately there isn't a criticism of how society is awful for so many different people in so many different ways. That sort of falls into the background and isn't really addressed. And I think, as you've alluded to, you know, it ends with this white loner dude being held up as a hero after engaging in really horrific types of violence.
Yeah, but then it also, the problem, there's so many problems with this. The main problem that I have, which is this annoying, we'll just make this an explicit show from now on. It's this annoying fucking Fight Club thing that everybody has to copy as the unreliable narrator. And then by the end, you actually don't even know if any of this happened. It's actually, you're not sure if any of this really happened, which turns it all into like, well, then what was the fucking point of all this? And are you really saying anything? But I want to touch on what you said, because I had that very same thought, but I think I would put it in a little bit different way, and hopefully it's valuable. I've been thinking about this and why it's these characters, like, you know, and it's Heath Ledger's Joker as well. I'm trying to think of the other ones. It might be the Fight Club movie, maybe, but it's interesting to look at why these stories tend to be so effective and popular. Because as we're talking about this movie, it's shattering, you know, box office records for this time of year, at least. But it's quite popular. Like, it's, people are buying tickets, they're going and seeing it. And I was just thinking about it, and I think it really does come down to this white male entitlement, which is to say that, like, behind this, the whole movie. So you get this, like, he's beat down by society, literally beat down by society at points. He's doing his best to make a living, but it's as a clown, which, side note, a horror movie could just be about a clown trying to make a living, and there's nothing else going on. Like, it's just that. That's already horrific enough. But now we have a murder clown. You don't even need the murder, but just a clown is already horrific enough. Anyway, so he's beaten down with society. The neighbor, you know, who's what's her name? I blank on what she's from. Yeah, she's from something that I really are like two things that I really like. I think one of them is Easy, Netflix show. And then there's something else I've seen her in. I really like her, but she's, you know, the beautiful neighbor is kind of people are ignoring him. They don't, you know, his comedy career isn't going anywhere. And the reason this character at all works for people is because for white men, things are supposed to go well. Like, you deserve, like, he, Joaquin Phoenix's character deserves stuff. Like, he doesn't understand why doesn't just get to be a comedian or just get to be with the beautiful neighbor. But like, we never have this story, and I'm racking my brain, and please let me know if I'm wrong. We never have this same character, but like as a black woman. It would make no sense. Like, for example, you know, she's, by the way, part of, if you did this character for a black woman, it would be, she's completely mediocre or even like sub ochre, less, whatever that is, less than ochre. And she would be like, you know, has no real sense of humor, but expects everybody to laugh at her jokes. And then like goes on a murderous rampage when, you know, a man isn't going for it. Like, we never have that character. It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't give the audience the same, like, oh yeah, he showed it to those Wall Street douchebags that he killed on that train. We don't really have that same thing with any other character, but a white man, because there's the entitlement that like, this is what's supposed to be handed to white men. If white men play by these rules, then they're supposed to get all this success. And we don't have that same, I guess, mindset for most other groups of people.
Yeah, so I actually totally agree with that. And that's why Molyneux's, you know, frustration with this movie was so humorous to me. Because all of the things that he's worried about, that it being this sort of left-wing propaganda to raise the social consciousness, just seems to me to be misplaced, because it still takes for granted that at the center of the story, we're supposed to be sympathizing with the white men and none of the other characters that orbit their world. They are just emotional support devices. They're not people. And so I don't think Molyneux really has any reason to worry about the danger that this movie poses to society because of its, you know, left-wing political message.
I really don't care about that guy, but I wonder why there's some reason. He'll come up with some reason that he doesn't like it that's, like, so fucking stupid that it'll be, like, too SJW or something. Like, the movie is too SJW because some other reason. But anyway,
right. And it's not, because at the heart of it isn't that we need to fundamentally restructure society so that it benefits all people. Right. We're not encouraged to feel sympathy for Arthur's mother, who has obviously been equally abandoned to struggle with her mental health and the financial implications about that. We're not encouraged to sympathize with the woman of color, single mom, neighbor next door, who was existing in the exact same circumstances. We're encouraged to identify with the white guy who ends up resorting to really extreme forms of violence as a form of self-empowerment, which, by the way, is like the absolute worst and wrong interpretation of Nietzsche, in case anybody is tempted to conflate the two.
My biggest thing is that I just don't understand the point of making this movie. Like, I really don't. And I have to say, I predicted something like years ago, because I've always hated these comic book movies. And for years I've been saying I'm tired of these fucking things. And then there's 70,000 more of them. But anyway, my prediction was eventually we will get to the point where they'll just be making movies, but like it'll fully merge. So we started off where you have these movies that, you know, would be typically thought of as like an Oscar movie, where it's like, it's, you know, it's dramatic, it's a dark comic, whatever it is. And then you had comic book movies, and there were the goofy things where people put on costumes and all that. And then my prediction was it was going to merge to where you'd get the comic book characters, but they'd just be in movies, and they wouldn't really, you know, they would still have the same names and do, but like they would want it to be more mainstreamy Oscar bait stuff. And we got there. Like, I was 100% right. This is just trying to make a movie. And what bothers me about this is there's no fucking point to it. This really, when you're talking earlier, when you're talking about how like you normally like these things and I don't, I was actually, I'm excited to maybe zag a little bit when people thought I was going to zig. This movie should have been more of a comic book movie, because I don't understand the point of this. And this is ruined a little bit. I had to go down a rabbit trail, which I'm mad at this movie for making me do, of like, okay, what the fuck is going on with this thing? And it turns out there's the killing joke is like the graphic novel that everybody loved that has the Joker. And like, there's a line where, you know, the Joker in the killing joke says, if I have a backstory, I prefer it to be multiple choice. And so there's this like Batman in world thing that you don't really, it's better to not explain Joker. And so in the end, the whole fucking punchline of this might be that Joaquin Phoenix isn't actually Joker. Like, the Joker that'll go on from this to be in the fucking sequel and fight Batman or do any of that crap is going to be somebody else. It won't actually be him. And like his story was either in his imagination, or it'll be like told to somebody else who will like use it to be the real Joker. So that all is just so frustrating and stupid to me. But what frustrates me about this is when you go the unreliable narrator route, and you're just telling a story of a guy who's suffering from severe delusions, it ends up being completely pointless. And why is it even a superhero movie? There's no superhero. There's not even really a supervillain of any kind. There's a guy, there's a murderer. There's a common everyday murderer is what there is. Like, there's a guy who shoots, well, we're not sure. He might have shot nobody, or he might have killed his neighbor and his doctor and his whatever. We don't know. But either way, he's not like competent. He's not like a plotting, you know, like super genius going to do all the crazy stuff where like in, you know, the Heath Ledger one where he's diabolical. He's not any of that. He's just mentally ill. So it's like, look at the severely mentally ill guy shoot some people. That's all it fucking is.
I do have to ask you why you hate fun and happiness, because Guardians of the Galaxy is just a good time. Just wonderful.
Well, it's fine.
It's great. This is just you're wrong.
Okay, that's fair.
But yeah, that was one of my frustrations with this movie, is that Joker's narrative just seemed to lack any sort of coherence, and not in the sense that like he's mentally ill, so he doesn't act in accordance with reason, but that narratively it just didn't really work. You know, his original violence, his first act of murder is, I think, plausibly understood as an act of self-defense. You know,
the train killings.
Yeah. And I think there's a way to understand that as maybe perhaps an overreaction to threat given his history of trauma, but also in that light, reasonably understood possibly as motivated by self-defense, right? So the scene, these three Wall Street bros are on the train and they begin harassing this other woman, which is, you know, a really uncomfortable scene because of the misogyny that's just like baked into it, right? And they're obviously drunk. It's late at night. They're trying to get this the attentions of this woman that doesn't go well. And then they turn their attention on to the Joker because one of the manifestations of his mental illness is to laugh inappropriately, which was actually the one thing that I thought was an interesting sort of choice. Yeah. But he starts laughing because he's uncomfortable by the way that they're threatening this woman. And so they turn on him. And at this point, he's been given the gun after having been beaten up by the kids in the back of the street. And in response to them threatening him and getting into his face, he shoots them. And then he goes from shooting them in self-defense to following one of the Wall Street bros off the train and shooting him. And it's not exactly clear how he goes from reacting in that moment of fear to actively planning murder. It just seems like a big plot hole to me.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, first off, like, I don't know how much he actively plans, because like the whole time I'm watching this thing, I'm thinking, okay, from my limited comic book knowledge, like I at least have watched some Batmans, you know, I've watched I like the 1989 one, and I actually like the Christian Bale one. So, you know, those are not bad. And so I'm thinking, all right, eventually we get to the Joker holding the city hostage, doing his hijinks. But I'm thinking this guy can't do that. Like I've seen the first half of the movie. He can't even write a stand-up joke that makes any sense. Like he has no awareness. They've made a character that's very much not really able to keep up with the world around him. You know, like he doesn't fully, like there's no way this guy is going to be the diabolical Joker that we all know and love or whatever. And so I'm thinking he's going to go on a rampage, but he actually doesn't really end up planning much murder other than I think the justification. So sorry, going back, I do kind of disagree that it's a plot hole, because I think the justification is he finally feels important, because he has a line where he's like, yeah, everybody's kind of talking about me finally, because they're all what happens is he gets away and the police put out the notice that like it's a guy in a Joker, you know, a clown mask has committed these murders, and he thinks he's going to get in trouble, but he never does. And he finds it satisfying that like everybody in the city has taken notice of this. And I think that's where the inspiration comes. And I think they are going for some sort of extreme nihilism, in that it's like everything is kind of misery for this character, except or like the only thing he even says, like the only thing I find funny, the only good joke is it's killing people, right? Isn't that kind of where he ends up at?
Well, he says he decides to think of his life, he's going to stop thinking of it as a tragedy, right? And instead he's going to think of it as a comedy. But to me, like, it seems like they mashed this dialogue that they had that they thought would be good with this character whose narrative arc just doesn't really seem to mesh with it to me. Even when he kills the coworker who shows up at his house, right? Like, That's sort of a crime of opportunity, a sort of crime of self-defense. This has been a person who's been, you know, absolutely awful to him, who has lied about how he got the gun. And so he sort of, you know, this is almost a crime of passion, and he kills him. And it just seems, I don't know, inconsistent to me how these it goes from doing that. And even the murder of the talk show host played by Robert De Niro, right? Like, even that I can sort of see as a sort of self-defense. He realizes that this is a person who's only bringing him on the show to make fun of him and put him down and further rub his nose in it. And it just, I can't get from there to him, you know, enjoying it standing on the car. I just don't get.
Well, that the sense did, I don't that know that happened though.
So that's fair.
That brings me back to the frustration of this whole thing. Like, it, I'm not saying you can never have an unreliable narrator, and you know, sometimes it's cool to do like the mind fuck, like, oh, was that all that imagined? And I actually sent you a message because 10, 15 yeah. fucking minutes into this thing, I will show you the goddamn timestamps where I was like, oh my God, this neighbor being into him better be a fucking hallucination. And thank God it was. But that also didn't really do anything, right? Like,
well, that just sort of gets at the kind of point that I was making too earlier, that to the extent that this movie acknowledged the existence of people with marginalized identities beyond that of white men, they were treated as emotional support animals and props and not like actual people. That really frustrated me. From my read, I interpret it as, you know, his relationship with this woman was clearly false, as was, yeah, you know, his fantasies of being on the Murray Show before he ended up on the Murray Show. Yeah. But you make a really good point. It's hard to draw a line between what's supposed to have really happened and what was just another of his fantasies. You could absolutely be correct that the scene at the end where he's standing on the car, you know, enjoying the revelry of the chaos that he's caused is itself another hallucination. I don't know. That's fair.
Well, because right after that, and again, we've already given the spoiler alert, but that, so I was envisioning, oh, okay, now he's going to lead the crowd to some mischief and that's the Joker part of the thing. But it just cuts to he's in the quote unquote insane asylum. Like, it just cut, like, he gets the mob basically does the movie trope that I'm so fucking sick of, which is car driving. Oh, we're just driving. We're all good. And then car T-bones it. Somehow it was all planned all along. It's every single fucking movie now and show. Ah, it's the perfect, like, gotcha, jump scare, car T-boned. How do you time that? How did this mob of random people specifically time T-boning a police car going at full speed? How do they always do that? I'll never know. I'll never know how they time that. Anyway, the mob that somehow also decides to rescue him because he's an icon. And parenthetically, I want to note that maybe one of the possible good things about this movie that I thought was interesting was the idea that Joaquin Phoenix himself and Joker, the character, wasn't political. That he didn't actually try to kill, because what happened was the backdrop of the movie is this Occupy Wall Street thing, you know, where like people are really mad at the rich people in Gotham who are benefiting and everybody else is not. And also in the movie, like you said, his healthcare gets cut because rich people and all that. And so in the backdrop of that, he murders these three Wall Street bros, but he does so for reasons that have nothing to do with politics. And I do like that his character was like, I don't care about politics. I murdered them, you know, like, they had nothing to do with politics and I'm not political. And I like, maybe if the potential message was going to be like, okay, don't just latch on, you know, there's a danger of latching on to these figureheads in movements or whatever, who are actually totally immoral or amoral and aren't really people you should be latching on to, you know? Like, I thought, like, okay, is that something they're going for? That's kind of an interesting message. But I don't really know. Once again, because of all the gimmicks in this, I don't have any idea what they really want to say.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that they did. I enjoyed the movie to the extent that it was a comic book movie. I thought Joaquin Phoenix's performance was absolutely brilliant given the constraints of what he had. But this seemed to be a movie that wasn't sure of what it wanted to say. And where it made its social commentary, right? Like, as you point out, the backdrop to this is the breakdown of society because the rich have sort of abandoned the social contract, is seemingly accidental. I think you make a good point that it's really easy in the midst of so much suffering to read into things whatever we want it to be saying when they're not actually saying that at all. And actually, I think Michael Moore's review makes that point better than anything else. He so desperately wants there to be the social commentary that corresponds to his worldview that he is, you know, reading into this exactly what he wants to see and in ways that are, I think, inconsistent because he's just so eager to have something to say, see, I'm right. And he's not really applying a metric of consistency to it.
I have a few ways that I think this movie could have been way better. I want to make a note that I think is interesting. And again, I know people, I'm not the comic book, far from the comic book expert. So I'm gonna say some things. Feel free to poke holes in this or tell me this already exists or something. But I do think it's very interesting to look at the evolution of superheroes. Because I can't remember when Batman's from, but it's at least like, what, the 50s or something? It's pretty old, right?
I'm not sure. I'd have to Google it.
Whatever. It's quite old. It's at least the 60s, you know, that the original show or whatever. I don't know if the comic books go back even before that. But I think it's interesting that, you know, again, as a casual observer, it seems like whenever these things were popular, whenever they became popular, it really made sense to a very, you know, white-centric worldview, which was the predominantly, you know, portrayed point of view on TV back then or whatever media back then. It made sense that, like, the biggest threat out there are these criminals of different kinds, and they got their masks, and they're stealing bags of money, or they're doing whatever. And what we need is a hero who's going to go, like, kapow through them and, like, you know, save us. But nowadays, it's funny because Batman, to my eye, is kind of just a cop. Like, he's just a really, really effective police officer, like an efficient, you know, crime fight. That's what they are. Like most of these superheroes, most of them, not all of them, but like most of the classic superheroes, they're just really, really effective cops. And our society is like, maybe, especially, you know, maybe like this kind of culture, starting to not really be super in love with cops. And we're not thinking like, okay, what we need to solve America's problems is just a cop with amazing super guns, you know, like a superhero-y cop that can, you know? And I really like the idea of turning Thomas Wayne into a villain. And maybe, I don't think they have the guts to do it, but also Bruce Wayne is a villain. Also Batman is the villain. I think it would be really interesting. Sorry, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Bruce Wayne doesn't really look like the good guy in Batman versus Superman, which is a terrible, terrible, no good movie. Don't watch it. It's awful. But yeah, I totally agree with you. I looked it up, by the way. The first Batman comic came out in 1939.
Okay.
And I think this, that sort of points in the direction of why as a culture we're sort of drawn to these sorts of stark contrasts.
Well, plus back then you had like Nazis and stuff. Like, oh wait, no,
well, also, I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
Yeah, no, you're right. You got me.
Yeah, the Nazis are back. And as they like to say in class, since we're debating this again, they are still bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think this gets at the idea that there's something comforting in slicing up the world in very black and white conceptions of good guys versus bad guys. And I think that's one of the things that comic books and comic book movies provide to their audience who are living in morally gray times that are difficult to make sense of, is this sort of fantasy world where the good guys can be easily sorted from the bad guys and the good guys at the end of the day ultimately win. And what I think would have been really interesting and where this movie got close is that it engaged the gray areas. Mm-hmm. That very often the people who become the villain in our stories are trying to navigate situations that are extraordinarily difficult. And that had the world worked out slightly differently, they may not have turned into the villains, which is not in any way exonerate Joker for his terrible choices. But I think that's part of the appeal, is that they sum the world up in ways that are neat and comforting, which is very much unlike the reality of the world we have to navigate.
All right. I have like seven more ways that I want to remake this movie. So feel free to jump in.
Yeah, no,
but along those lines. So I think what they should have done, where they went wrong, in my opinion, well, so many ways, but the mental illness, to the degree and extent that they portrayed it, I think just makes it truly difficult to have a character that to have a Joker. Like, so that's why I think they're going to do the cop out of, you know, he's not even really the Joker. And by the way, another side note, sorry, so many thoughts, but the whole Joker thingy of he actually killed Batman's parents after the movie, we got this whole thing where I was like, well, at least he's going to do that at some point, right? And maybe it'll be political. Like, we also have another storyline that I'm going to get back to that we've touched on about, you know, him thinking Thomas Wayne is his dad. So clearly we're going to get the Joker killed the Batman's parents. No. For some reason, and riddle me this, maybe there's some, I haven't
That's
actually come up with a
good Batman villain.
Yeah, you're right. Joker me this. What? Why did they decide to, A, they're still going to do the Batman parent death thing, but they make it a guy who was, we don't know who it was, and who was just like inspired by the Joker or something, and is like, take this, Thomas Wayne, you get what you deserve, for some reason. But not have it be Joaquin Phoenix. It just seemed like they were just needlessly trying to do a twist, you know, like, oh, I thought it was going to be Joaquin Phoenix, but it was this person that's nobody that we don't know. What the hell?
Yeah, so this seemed to me just another example of this movie not really sure what it wanted to accomplish. They're just too many different pieces. Its handling of mental illness, I really thought was lazy, is the most charitable interpretation I can give in this. And, you know, I know there's always a lively debate between Marvel fans and DC, but this to me stood out as an example of where Marvel really handled this in a way that was interesting and narratively coherent, where DC tends to just kind of throw spaghetti on the wall to see what sticks. So there's a character in the Black Panther movie, which you probably didn't see.
I saw are there two of those by now or just one? I saw one of them.
So I think there's the one standalone Black Panther movie, but yeah. Black Panther also makes an appearance in Endgame.
Okay, I've seen all that. I've seen all those things, I'm baby. Impressed. Here we go. I don't remember most of it, but...
So there's the villain in the Black Panther movie is also... Is what?
Gollum.
No. Also, if you hate on The Hobbit, I may have to quit.
I'm not hating on The Hobbit. It's Andy Serkis. Or is there another villain? Who's the main villain?
Andy Serkis is
the villain.
So Andy Serkis is in it, but the main villain.
Okay, he's a henchman or something.
Is Killmonger, right? And so Killmonger. He is originally...
Michael B. Jordan?
Yeah. And so, you know, he's criminally insane, you're right, in the way that, you know, Joker is defined as criminally insane. But he's criminally insane in a way that's coherent with his ability to carry out the sort of crimes that result.
That's interesting.
I
see what you're saying, but I didn't
insanity.
Think there was any. Did you? Is he supposed to actually have any mental illness? I didn't get that from Black Panther at all.
No,
I got
not.
That.
He's not having any mental illness, right? But his understanding of the world is resulting in this sort of potentially world-ending violence, right?
He's
internalized the historical struggle of Black people, despite not actually having been, you know, held captive as a slave or whatever. He's really internalized and personalized the historical struggle to such an extent that he's taken it to such an extreme logical conclusion that he's, you know, willing to bring about, you know, potentially world-ending violence and social change. So I think that would sort of fall under, you know, criminal insanity. But it's narratively coherent. Who he is as a character, what he carries out in his life before he gets to this level of supervillain is consistent with what he aspires to be, what his skill sets are, in a way that just doesn't make any sense in this movie. The Joker can't even manage to live on his own, or Arthur, rather, right? Like, he's literally living in a one-bedroom apartment with his mom. He's like, you know, the dude who needs his dad to pay rent. because he can't manage it well enough on his own. And yet somehow we're supposed to believe that this he's going to go on to become this like great criminal mastermind that subjects Gotham to chaos. It doesn't
make any sense.
If
they try to do that, that's absurd because he's not that. He can't be that. And I don't know that they're even trying to do that. But that begs the question for me, or sorry, I'm using incorrect usage. That raises the question is what I meant to say. That raises the question for me.
I was going to let it slide.
No, don't let it slide. I like the proper usage of that one. I just accidentally misspoke. That raises the question for me. Why even do the stupid comic book thing to begin with? If this is a good enough compelling story to be just a story of a guy, because it's so pedestrian. It's like... the equivalent would be if you're like, okay, we're going to do a new gritty, realistic Batman. Here's what it is. It's a guy who has a fondness for bats, and he is wearing a bat shirt that has a bat on it when a woman is drowning in a lake, and he rescues the woman while wearing a bat shirt. You're like, well, okay, I mean, you found a way to make Batman like just a regular guy, I guess, but like... for what? Like, what is the point? You know? And that's what I felt like with it. Okay. You found a way to like kind of make a maybe believable, totally, like you're saying, just absolutely nonsense, insane person have a laugh that makes him the Joker. And he worked as a clown. So that also is a tie-in, but like, why? It's not other than that. It has nothing to do with being the Joker that I can. What's the point? It should have either been a comic book movie or just make a movie.
Right. And so that's sort of my biggest frustration with this movie is that where it hit interesting notes, it seemed to do it entirely accidentally and without respect to any sort of message it wanted to convey. Like this laughter, for example, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, me too.
Because, you know, it turns out this is his response to things that make him uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And it gets at this idea of toxic masculinity. Here is a man who has been subject, we come to find out, to significant abuse and trauma in his life, but whose mother, you know, required him to just say that he was happy, right? That he always seemed like a happy boy. She actually refers to him as happy. And this sort of psychological pressure results in the suppression of his true emotions, that whenever he does feel actual vulnerability or any genuine emotion, it manifests in this inappropriate and out of place laughter. And I thought, wow, that could have really been interesting. But I don't think they did it on purpose. They're like, oh, he's the Joker, so he laughs.
I mean, it's on purpose, but I don't think they did enough with it. I totally agree that, like, I like that concept and I thought it could have been interesting, but they do nothing with it that matters. That's just it. In the end, in the end, it's like, okay, so he laughs. That's what you've done with that. You found a way to make him laugh. Like, oh, I get it. The comic book character, the Joker, laughs. So therefore you found, again, it's like, cool. He has a shirt with a bat on it. You found a way to make him a Batman, but it's not, you know, it doesn't, why are they doing this? But okay, I gotta go back to my plan to revamp this movie. I'm hoping.
Yeah, we're only at maybe, two, so you have five more.
Yeah. And maybe you can help me. Maybe you can, you know, we can revamp it together. See, get rid of the part where he's so fucking incompetent and pathetic, he can't do anything. Cause that doesn't work. It doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't. Cause he is, like you outlined, he is a pathetic character, like, and you know, at times a sympathetic character in different ways, sure, but like, you can't have your supervillain be a guy, like you say, who lives with his mother because he can't even manage to do anything. It's not like a creepy, it doesn't even work as like a you know, what's the fucking Hitchcock movie, you know, it doesn't even work
Norman
as
Bates.
Yeah, it doesn't even really work in that way because he's just pathetic. Like, he's in every way, he's not going to be a villain. But anyway, get rid of that. Keep most of the other stuff. And here's the thing that drove me nuts. So we talked about that storyline. So his mom has been writing letters to Thomas Wayne because she was a Wayne employee or whatever, Wayne Enterprise, whatever the company is. She was an employee of his. And she believes that, like, he's gonna help us out because they say that, like, everyone who works there is a family. And, like, keep that. Like, I like that. And then you come to find out, he opens one of her letters and she says, you need to help your son, you know? And so she believes that Thomas Wayne had an affair with her or something got her pregnant and then like forced her to quit. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm liking this because this is the Thomas Wayne is a villain and maybe even Batman is a villain. Like I was kind of into that. I was like, all right, this is a good plot idea. I don't mind that. And then they totally fucking ruin it because unless you're leaving room for a unreliable narrator, you come to find out that she's actually just a crazy person. And so therefore she of course made up a crazy story about the CEO of the company having had a child with her. And even after they did that, I was like, okay, that's going to be a lie, right? It's going to turn out that Thomas Wayne actually is his father, right? Nope. That's just a crazy lady who makes up crazy rape lies or whatever, which is terrible.
Like, yeah, I'm totally with you on this.
It would have been like, great had it been like, oh, she actually maybe went crazy because he gaslighted her. Like maybe he, you know, like got rid of her out of the company and then like lied on these records and told everybody that she's crazy. And like that was part of her story of why like she was a bad mother. And like then it would all come around to the real villain, Thomas Wayne, who then I thought it was going to be fucking awesome. And then at the end he would, but it doesn't work. None of that happens. So that's what I think should happen. He should be the real villain. He should have gaslighted her. And it turns out he is Joker's father. And that's why Joaquin Phoenix kills him, Batman's parents at the end. And then you're like, well, honestly, like Thomas Wayne kind of had it coming, you know, like you turned the Joker into kind of the anti-hero, like the hero, but also the darker kind of hero, you know, and then you turn Batman into the fucking villain. It would have been amazing.
I totally agree with that. And that's what I was kind of hoping for as well. There's been a lot of commentary, right, that Joker and the Batman are two sides of the same coin and that the real reason that Batman can never kill the Joker isn't because of like some high-minded commitment to not kill, but because he actually needs the Joker to make sense of his own existence. And so he's necessary to him. And it would have been such an interesting inversion of that to set up Thomas Wayne as the bad guy to further connect these two characters to each other. And I just thought it was just another place where this movie came so close. And then because it didn't really know what it wanted to accomplish, just missed the ball.
Yep. The other thing, and this has been a meme that I've seen everywhere, but let's be honest, the Joker should be a woman who was told to smile too many times, right? I mean, obviously that should have been the character they make. I mean, it'd be fantastic. Get some amazing feminist women to write it, you know, and come up with all these like misogynist interactions she has. She becomes the Joker. It's perfect, right?
Right. That would have been awesome. Right? That narratively made sense. You could have had a person you could understand, could have, you know, the competency to go on to become the sort of supervillain. Yeah. To be like, ooh, you know, that's not actually how I would recommend solving these problems, but like I kind of admire the boldness. Where this Joker just seems to stumble into violent murder.
Yeah. And not only that, she can be super competent, but she never gets credit because some man takes her idea in the boardroom, right? We got all every classic like feminist, you know, like cause poured into this character and make her finally snap. I mean, in fairness, I'm trying to think like, does she have to, when you have like an anti-hero like this, does she just go too far? Or like, there's got to be some reason. Because right now she's just like a great sympathetic character that I like. So does she have to go too far or something? Maybe, the part where she starts killing random men. Maybe that's too far.
Yeah, she actually embodies the sort of imaginary feminazi that the right wing has been pretending exists, but doesn't. But you know, she dresses up, you know, in androgynous ways. And so, because it never occurs to the police that a woman could be capable of this sort of mastermind level of villainy, they never even think to look for a woman and their perp is a dude as far as they're concerned. And the very misogyny that causes her to become violent, it ends up being her most powerful mask. That would have been some great social commentary.
I'm having so many ideas. I mean, I shouldn't write this, but I'm having so many ideas. You could do like when she's, you know, in her origin story, she's still just, you know, person, whatever. She goes on it. She's trying to go on a date and she has to like, she could do the thing that I think Christy Winters came on my show and talked about a game that like, you have to play in first person as God, I swear I could be making this up, but I think she said this where you're like getting ready for a date and you have to seeing the differences of like what women have to prep for versus what men have to do. And the fact that like she has to be so conscious of like not dressing too provocatively to so that she'd get street harassed or whatever, but then also doesn't want to look totally stuffy and boring to her date. And like, and then in the end, you get the Joker mask because she's so fucking fed up of trying to look just right for everybody that she just like lipsticks a fucking Joker smile on her face, right? What do you think?
Yeah, infinitely more interesting. But then you would have had, you know, the incels screaming on Reddit, just like they did, you know, the women in Ghostbusters about how we were
destroying. It'd be such a good movie, though. It'd be such a good movie.
I think it would have been much better. Although, I have to say, I did enjoy Joaquin Phoenix's performance. I thought he was great. But, you know,
I agree.
Absent, removed from the context of the movies and the narrative incoherence, he was astonishing. So I'm glad that I got to see that, which was the main reason I wanted to see the movie in the first place. But I agree with you. I think a woman as a Joker, particularly given our current moment, would have been so much more interesting.
Oh, would have been the best. They should do that.
Somebody not with this director, you know, which is funny because I was thinking about this as I was watching the movie. He really seemed to undermine his own point about how wokeness is ruining comedy, because it seemed to me, and I don't know, maybe I'm just, you know, too much of an SJW to like think meaningfully about this. I don't know. But there are those scenes with the little person, right? Where you're definitely made to feel as though the decision of the other clowns to make fun of him is not a good one, right? That their decision to sort of pick on him obviously betrays a sort of moral defect. And so it was striking to me that the director of this movie went on about how the left is ruining comedy and, you know, you can't do anything funny anymore if you can't punch down, when such a part of this movie was that it's obviously like not cool to do that.
Yeah, I wish he had just kept his dumb mouth shut, this director. It would have been a little better. Plus, I mean, I think there are a lot of other ways we've highlighted that this movie is pretty flawed. And ultimately, that's what my ultimate takeaway from all this for me personally is just like, why? Just make a comic book movie. For the love of God, if you're going to make a comic book movie, make a comic book movie. What is this? Is it... I don't know.
Yeah, I know. You're more cynical on this point than I am, but my favorite part of this movie was the preview for the Harriet Tubman movie. I was really excited about that.
I'm excited too. Yeah, you're referencing, I was making fun of the hacky Hollywood writing that is in every movie, but that's okay. I'm still going to watch it because it did look incredible. And the acting looked incredible. I can't wait.
Yeah, and that was my favorite part of this movie. I really liked the idea that, like, the person that we were meant to identify as a hero wasn't this totally mediocre white man who felt entitled to so much more than his talents were actually consistent with, but the actual moral heroism of a black woman at a time when most people were not even willing to recognize that black women were people. And I just thought that was exciting. So for whatever this movie's flaws are, there was at least one preview that gave me hope that we might get movies that more meaningfully probe these deep social questions.
All right. Yeah. And I guess the only other note I had is, when we're talking about this controversy of you know, is this going to be like some incel bait, you know, murdering thing, something that's going to be inspirational to those kind of people. Part of me was a little, I was wondering about this question. I kind of am curious your thoughts on it. When we look at the kind of the white male entitlement part of stories like these, where, you know, they are taking out their impotence on society, really, like they think they deserve stuff, they don't get it, then the audience is meant to be like, well, yeah, then you start killing, you know, or at least somewhat, they're meant to like somewhat identify with the idea that, you know, this person deserves something, doesn't get it, and takes it out on people. One question I have, if not for this film, then the next one is, I don't know whether to take a movie like this as, oh, we are recognizing that this exists and portraying it versus we are reinforcing a negative trope. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I think a lot of the questions I have, like, I'm not sure the answer to this question. You know, I would never say that, like, every movie you make, the characters all have to be, like, morally good and have to do the right, you know, social justice-y thing and whatever. But, like, how sometimes I really don't know if I watch a movie and I think, oh, yeah, this shows how entitled white people are, that they feel this way. So therefore, it's like it's showing us that, or, you know, and you never know the intent. Is the director, like, just subconsciously believes this? And that's why they wrote the movie. I think the director also co-wrote it. That's why they wrote it this way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I don't know the answer to that. But I think it's a good question. To me, I think this movie was done in a way that isn't going to meaningfully shed light on how to answer it, because I don't think its own message is consistent with itself.
Yeah.
And I think it's a sort of thing that people are going to read into it whatever sort of preconceived notions they have. I agree with you that the right answer isn't to have art that solely consists of morally upstanding characters. In fact, you know, one of
that would be my horrible.
It would be horrible. It would be boring, and we'd never learn.
It'd be like the
anything.
Church. It would be like when everything had to be a morality play or whatever.
Right. I mean, some of my favorite novels involve characters that are deeply morally flawed, because it's through them we're able to think meaningfully about our own moral flaws and what to do, and how to overcome. And it's that last bit, I think, that leaves this movie lacking the most. As I was watching this, just, you know, given what I do for a living, the thought that kept coming back to me was, like, this is how Nietzsche is going to continue to be misrepresented as, you know, this drive towards meaninglessness and chaos. And I was just really disappointed, because that's actually not the right understanding of Nietzsche. He didn't do all of this writing to say, well, the world is bleak and barren and we should just give up and be destructive and violence is as good as mercy. In fact, he's quite clear that the takeaway from the absurdity of the world and the absence of objective meaning is an opportunity for us to create something that's beautiful, to manifest mercy. In fact, he even says in one of his works that mercy is superior to cruelty because cruelty betrays that someone actually lacks power. And this is another example of that, where I just feel like the transformational sort of impact that art could have isn't going to be had here, because it's just sort of a bunch of different things slapped together without any reference to anything.
Yeah, I think that's a great note to go out on. We've gone about an hour, so that's plenty. Yeah, I think we can leave it there. Thanks so much for doing this. I hope people enjoyed this. It's, you know, a little different for the show, but I think it was fun, and there's a lot of cultural interesting, you know, points that go into this. And ultimately, I mean, there's nothing wrong with. In my opinion, there's nothing wrong with, like, watching this movie, and I found parts of it enjoyable, even if ultimately I just thought it set up for something cool at the end, and then it was nothing. Like, it just was absolutely nothing at the end. But anyway, whatever. I don't hate anybody who enjoyed the film. Like, have fun. That's my final thought. Any last word for you?
Yeah, no, that's it. This was fun. Glad we got to do it. Look forward to, you know, returning to our usual shtick next time.
I can't wait to hear what people think about this. Feel free to call in, leave a voicemail or email or whatever you want to do. I'm curious what people thought of the movie and our analysis. And I hope they get some amazing female writers to start working on that Joker idea, because it's great and it would be great. And I know I didn't come up with everybody. That's already out there. Like, everyone knows this should be what it is. Anyway, all right. Thanks. Please pledge at patreon.com/seriouspod to support the show. We really appreciate it. It's the reason it keeps happening. And we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.